Now it can be told. It wasn't quite the Cuban Missile Crisis, but in December 2009, U.S. and Libyan officials were quarreling over what to do with 5.2 kilograms of uranium, enough to make a dirty bomb, which was sitting lightly guarded outside a nuclear facility near Tripoli. How dangerous was it? Well, it could have been stolen by, say, Al-Qaeda operatives. But as the days wore on, it could have leaked radiation and caused a biological disaster. So why was it there? What happened? The month-long crisis was never revealed by the Obama administration or reported on until now. Atlantic Magazine staff writer Max Fisher broke the story. Max, let's set the scene. Libya's relations with the U.S. had warmed. Libya had agreed to dismantle its nuclear weapons program. And this was the final batch of weapons-grade nuclear material that they were supposed to give to Russia to be destroyed. What happened?
Well, the plan had been to wheel it outside and immediately hand it over to American and Russian engineers and officials who were waiting for it. But all of a sudden, these Libyan officials said, you know what, we've changed our mind. We don't think that we're quite ready to hand these seven very large casks of some of the world's most dangerous materials over to you. And also, we're not going to wheel it back inside. We're going to leave it right here on this tarmac. And American and Russian officials, very understandably, were scrambling to figure out what had happened, why they had done this. And for several days, they couldn't even get anyone from the Libyan government on the phone. They were just shut out. And this, in retrospect, was very clearly a negotiating tactic. The Libyans wanted to scare the Americans and the Russians and say, listen, we're going to have some demands ready for you, and if you don't meet them, then we're going to leave this material just sitting outside where it was very dangerous. It could have been taken at any time. Anybody who found out about it or simply drove by could have overpowered the guard who, at one point, some of the American officials said, you know, there's one guard, and we're not even sure that his gun is loaded.
I mean, it's not funny, but you laugh because it's just absurd. And you say this was a negotiating tactic, but it seemed more like blackmail. Enter into your storyline Saif Gaddafi, who's one of the two sons of Muammar Gaddafi, said to be in line to, you know, assume leadership in Libya. And so he starts talking to U.S. officials. What does he say?
He sits down with the U.S. ambassador to Libya, and he basically says, I'm the only person who can solve this for you, but I have some requests. And basically what he wanted was for Libya and the U.S. to become even closer. He wanted money from the U.S. He wanted easing of a number of very serious trade embargoes against Libya. And his biggest and perhaps most unusual request was for more public meetings between Libyan and U.S. officials. And in fact, at one point, he proposed, it sounds crazy to anybody who follows diplomacy, he wanted Gaddafi and Obama to meet for a summit, which, you know, they would never do. So clearly what he wanted was he wanted the U.S. to recognize Libya for what the Gaddafis believe Libya is, which is one of the world's most important countries.
And we remind ourselves some of the context here. Muammar Gaddafi had something of a change of heart. Years ago, he wanted to be closer to the U.S. In fact, he, after 9/11, volunteered to go find Osama bin Laden. Of course, there's the Lockerbie bombing to overcome, not a small obstacle in U.S.-Libyan relations. And most recently, the man behind the bombing was released from Scotland to Libya. He was said to be sick, but people speculate he wasn't. So it's sort of a warming relationship, but with tremendous potholes.
You know, this is what's so amazing about this incident, because at its heart, Libya was dismantling its nuclear program, was cooperating with the U.S. and with Russia. When I talked to the State Department, they really underscored that ultimately they were happy with the way things turned out. But, you know, it's still Libya. These are still the Gaddafis. They're not above playing an incredibly dangerous game of blackmail if they think they're going to get something out of it. Saif Gaddafi, who is the reformist son of Gaddafi, has done great things to liberalize the country, but then on the other hand, he's been very happy to push this crisis along to try to extract some concessions for himself. So it's important to understand that even when Libya gets better, as it has been, it's still Libya and that's still dangerous.
Well, so at this point in your story, the material has been sitting in these casks outside of this nuclear facility for almost a month. It's supposed to be loaded onto this Russian cargo plane, as you write, one of the few in the world specially equipped to fly nuclear materials. It's just sitting there, and officials start to realize it's going to start cracking. The casks will start cracking, and this stuff will start leaking, and Russian engineers are trying to figure out, invent new technology to move it.
You know, this was a totally unprecedented problem in the entire history of nuclear proliferation, because never before is there nuclear material sitting in temporary casks, because this uranium is so hot it can only sit in the cask for a short while. So what these Russian engineers started to do, and it's really quite impressive when you look over this on-the-fly work they did, is they designed this never-before-made remote-controlled grapple, because this uranium was so hot it couldn't be touched, but it had to be taken out of the casks or the casks would crack from the heat. And their plan was to design this remote-controlled grapple that would open up the casks, extract the uranium, and then move it over to a pond that was used for uranium storage at the Tujuru facility.
Well, but they never had to use this grapple, because finally Saif sent word that he would allow it to be moved onto the Russian cargo plane. And we understand that this followed a phone call from Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to the Libyan foreign minister. What did she say?
It seems like she didn't really do much more than offer some kind of generalizations about how the U.S. and Libya would work more closely together, because it was a cable that the ambassador sent to the secretary right before her phone call. He asked for some general statements of encouragement, some very vague statements about how Libya was important to the U.S., the U.S.-Libyan relationship is important, and the State Department has echoed that language. But it does not appear that she offered anything concrete, and it doesn't look like, since this incident happened a year ago, it does not appear that the U.S. has really offered anything to Libya. So what's amazing about this is that, in the end, Saif meant exactly what he said, which is that he and Libya wanted recognition and respect, and that's what he got in the form of what appears to have been a very polite phone call from Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and that was it.
Well, since this is the week of the WikiLeaks documents, we should point out that we know of this Libyan story because these State Department cables were leaked to you.
Well, first I just want to say that these are not WikiLeaks cables. But the reason that I got them is because somebody with knowledge of this incident was very concerned about it. Because if you read about this, you realize that loose nuclear material is incredibly dangerous. You realize that even as Libya becomes more responsible, more moderate, friendlier to the U.S., it's still a dangerous country. And these are things that I think the world needs to be reminded of.
Max Fischer, staff writer at The Atlantic, and we'll link you to his story at hereandnow.org. About last year's nuclear standoff between the U.S. and Libya. Max, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.